Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sorted. Right, 1872. Let's move swiftly on to some rugby. We did have a wee look to see if there was any news, Ken. Probably the only bit of news worth mentioning. The warm-up, the British and Irish Lions warm-up test at Murrayfield against Japan will be, oh yes, free to air. Channel 4 have picked up the rights to it. It's the first time that the Lions will be all on what we would call Kunsel telly since 1993, which is... I mean, you were quite old then, Ian.
Yeah,
I was just a bairn.
That's just when I'd started smoking by 93. yes, first time for that'd be 30, nearly 30 years.
Right. It's good. I think Channel 4 are really, like, they are doing a really good thing for rugby in that, like, there's always the complaints about, obviously, everything going behind paywall. And Channel 4 are fairly new to the to rugby coverage, like a lot of channels, they've got the rights to the Ireland stuff, so you know, there tends to be quite a, their punditry is quite Irish based. There's quite a few of the salty Irish guys. Although I must say, I really like Jamie Heaslip. I actually quite like him as a pundit, and I didn't want to.
He was already on the poopy list, but he's redeemed himself.
He's clawed himself back out the poopy list.
I mean, to be fair, he didn't have, you know, this level of competition.
I mean, like, and people going on about Ronan O'Gara, like, down at La Rochelle. I really enjoy that he was beating one of the Irish provinces with La Rochelle, but I still think Ronan O'Gara is firmly on my poopy list.
I don't think you're the only one.
I don't think so.
There's been a lot of shade thrown, as the kids would say, that Neil Francis article. I assume, is that maybe being a hands in the rock? We'll save that for hands in the rock.
Let's save it for hands in the rock.
Yes, we'll do
let's,
that.
Let's bring it up then. So, 1872 Cup decider was this weekend over... Glasgow v Edinburgh over at Scotstoun. I think we'll just preface this all with, what a game of rugby. Thinking back to the 0-0 after 65 minutes in the first of the three legs, what a sensational game of rugby. Definitely couldn't take your eyes off it. Spoiler alert, Glasgow won. And took the 1872 Cup back to Scotstoun. But where do we start with this?
Will we go with the indiscipline of Glasgow? It's been a common theme.
Yes. Yes.
24 penalties. According to the Pro 14's official website, on a press conference call earlier, somebody thought it was maybe 27, but the Pro 14 are officially saying 24 penalties. And it's a bit of a miracle that Glasgow won, because it just gives Edinburgh field position. And it's been the same problem all season with them. But somehow they've managed to be pretty prolific when they've had the chances, gone out and won.
I think it was really interesting, actually. as you say, you know, the number of penalties Glasgow conceded in any situation, you shouldn't be winning games conceding 24 penalties. You know, the common stat is that you need to keep it to 10 or less is generally considered a top performance on the penalty count. I think there's an probably introducing one of our newer writers to the blog. There's a really interesting piece that's just been posted by Craig Manson. Hi, Craig. I hope to get you on here soon. But Craig posted regarding Edinburgh's attack. And I think there's been a lot made of Edinburgh's inability to kind of convert chances this weekend, of which they had plenty of field position to do what Edinburgh do very well. And they obviously scored two from rolling mauls, which is what you would expect to see. But Glasgow's defence wasn't that bad. I thought they had one of their better efforts, led by, you know, guys like Ryan Wilson. He gets a lot of shade on here, but he led really well.
Yeah, I thought him and Lockatui and Tom Gordon. I mean, when does Tom Gordon not impress us? You've just got to... basically all of Edinburgh's tries sort of eventually came from somewhere out of them all, two straight from them all, and then the third kind of just a phase or two later. You're just inviting trouble on. But I think, I mean, as Craig was saying in his piece, Edinburgh's attack is really blunt. It is all just sort of crash up through a forward and then, you know, hope for a pick and go. They've got Doohan van der Merwe out in the wing and they hardly ever utilised him. Like the one time he did get a wee bit of a gallop on, it took a sort of despairing Pete Horn lunge and two other players to help bring him down. And obviously they've had issues at 10. What with John O'Lance not to get a visa, and Chamberlain's had to come in, and a lot of time they have looked very disjointed and try to, like, just, you know, even just coming off a set piece move, you know, a couple of phases later, there's a miss pass which completely misses everyone. but it was both teams actually had plus 90% tackle rates. Glasgow were on 92. They missed one less, but they made the over 20 more than Edinburgh did.
Yep.
So, I mean, this has been the thing with Glasgow. Like, when they've actually been set, sometimes they're quite good, but it's been the Mull defence has been a nightmare. I remember, you know, the Irish teams have just pummeled both Glasgow and Edinburgh at that.
Went to town, haven't they?
Yep. And then scramble defence and just switching off at key moments. Scramble be quite a good area of ours, but now it seems to be, you know, if a team gets a chance, if there's a breakaway, they're going to score.
Yeah, like it will eventually result in a score, and I think that was really evident this weekend. What the bit for me, and back to discipline, and I'm not going to single out players necessarily, but let's say one or two very experienced Glasgow Warriors players, very much done their absolute damnedest to ensure Edinburgh were in position for quite a lot. So the first try comes directly from a mindless penalty from Fraser Brown. A mindless penalty. It was a Glasgow penalty that was reversed for him pushing a player.
Yeah, but, I mean, it just seems a bit soft. You know, there's always a wee bit of pushing and shoving, especially in a derby game.
You said to me, that referee, you know what you're going to get with him. You know that he's picky, he's pedantic, he's going to penalise very minimal things. And if you're a very, I mean, you're captain on the night, you need to set the example. And he's called him out straight away and said, you're the captain, I expect better. It's now a penalty against you. And the problem I have with it is Fraser Brown, we've had this conversation. Would he be a lion if it wasn't for these stupid penalties that he's given away? Potentially. There's no reason why he wouldn't be.
Yeah, you know, he's we've seen how destructive he is as a ball carrier. We know how good he is over the ball. arrows, you know, well, if you've got quality line-out jumpers, maybe that it's...
Yep.
I'm not saying that Scotland have poor line-out jumpers, but it does seem to have been a recurring flaw.
Yep.
Yeah, but it just becomes more and more apparent that he will give away more than one penalty a match, more than likely.
Definitely. And you want a player. You want a player to be playing on the edge, and that's fine. There's ways to do that, but there's playing on the edge. So, guys like Jamie Ritchie, let's go over to Edinburgh. Jamie Ritchie, like, he'll give away penalties during the game, but they're almost, for the most part, they're penalties that you're okay with, because he'll get away with two, he'll get away with three. Fraser Brown's penalties, they're just stupid. There's no need for them. You know, slow the ball down at a breakdown, give away a penalty, fine, right, okay, it happens. Maybe be a bit more sensible next time. Push someone when they're on the floor, when it's already your ball. Come on.
Change your line to obstruct somebody.
That's an FB special. He loves that one.
Quite a lot of no-arms tackling going on as well. Mm-hmm. He goes for a chop and just ends up shoulder barging someone in the shins.
Yep.
There's a line, and he quite often finds himself on the wrong side of it.
And you contrast that, it almost feels like I'm the guy doing the Edinburgh defence here, Ian. So contrast that with everyone's favourite New Scotland's hooker, Dave Cherry, who, again, doesn't do much wrong. He just consistently does. It's the old Ross Ford adage. It's the 6 out of 10 over and over again. Do the basics right and do them well. And he's, you know, we had a wee laugh and a joke about, you know, a Dave Cherry or George Turner, because we're all of the opinion Fraser Brown and Stuart McInally are probably still considered to be our top hookers. But George Turner has put his hand up, and there's no reason why he wouldn't be banging on the door to be Glasgow's number one. And then Dave Cherry as well. He's consistently doing the right things. And I think there's a lot to be said for having these guys involved in the squad. So will we talk? So I think let's do a couple of backs now from each side, just have a wee chin wag about them. I thought, from an Edinburgh perspective, I thought Damien Hoyland was absolutely insanely good. Defensively, yes. Wow.
Yeah, he put in one particularly memorable tackle on, I think it was Kyle Steen?
It was Greg. Greg, I think. He caught Greg. Greg was on the outside and he caught him. An absolute peach. If he doesn't make that tackle, it's try time. And
yeah, he's been impressive the last couple of weeks, so I think that's, you know, we're going to be talking possible Scotland tourers. Obviously, he's not had much of a look in with, you know, Kinghorn being preferred option at fullback, Darcy, Doohan, all the rest of you. So, you know, he's had to bide his time. But no, he's been in fine fettle.
It reminded me a lot, actually, of the way he put himself about. Again, well, we talked a few weeks ago about the benefits of the Sevens programme, and he reminded me a lot of, like, Lee Jones when he came back from Sevens, that defensive awareness, because, like, in Sevens, you have to make that tackle. If you don't make the tackle, it's try time. So the defensive work these guys get through, I don't think it's something you necessarily get from just playing 15s over and over. There's more of a kind of risk and reward approach. Maybe Nick Gregg should go and play some sevens.
He did. He used to play
sevens. Oh, yeah, he did actually, didn't he? Yeah.
Funnily, you should say, the other person I was going to pick out for Edinburgh was Rony Sow, who did two or three fantastic bits of defensive work and always looks a handful. And again, you know, Fijian, he's obviously played a bit of sevens in his time. Because there was two massive turnovers he won.
Yeah.
With Glasgow sort of camped on, well, not camped on the line, but, you know, in the Edinburgh 22. So he did spectacularly well in that aspect, and he was all right in attack, but you know, it's you're not getting a lot of good ball to play with.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? It's, you know, and we've already said that if the back line, if it's not going past or very far past first receiver, then, you know, a guy like Sau, who is a great attacking runner, is not really getting much to do. And it is a shame when you consider, and we'll come on to the discipline issues later on, but when you consider that starting back line, you've got Mark Bennett in there, you've got Doohan, you've got Sau, you know, that's, you let any of them loose, Hoyland as well, you know, get them on the ball, and there's a lot of damage that could be done. So, it's a bit of a shame, actually. Moving over to Glasgow. So, we'll not talk about the man of the match yet. We'll come on to him last, because I think that'll lead us nicely into some other chat. But Kyle Steyn, what another amazing performance.
Yeah, welcome back. We've certainly missed him. There was a couple of incredible kick chases. Again, he's helped win. He won a turnover off Bill Mata, of all people. And then, you know, straight after Edinburgh scored the first try, his kick chases, and Fraser Brown manages to get onto the ball, and Glasgow, you know, extend their lead straight away. He's missed nearly, I think it's been over a year since he's properly played.
They were saying 14 months.
Yeah,
which is a long time out.
I didn't realise it had been that long, but obviously, what with the pandemic and all, I remember he got injured just sort of when he'd been called up to the Scotland Six Nations 2020 squad. And he's not really been able to play since.
I think
maybe had a run out, but he's a cracking player. I like him at 13 as well because he's a strong defender.
He's benefit of the sevens program. His defensive work's great, and I thought what was really impressive with him, obviously he's got gas to burn as well, but the energy he was bringing. So he was one of the more vocal guys. And again, when we're still in this situation where you've got no fans, you know, you need players like him who are going to really just give you a bit of a lift and shout and ball and pat everybody on the back and get everybody going, which was exactly what he did. So just before we go on to everyone's man of the match and warrior of the month as well, actually, just announced, let's talk very briefly about the red cards, shall we? So for those of you who have been living under a rock, the Rainbow Cup, which is a slight colour of beige because we're not actually doing the rainbow element of it, given the issues with travel to South Africa just now. But we are doing new law variation trials, and one of these is the a red card can be replaced after 20 minutes, which I think we've seen the benefit of it later on in the match, but we also saw how it doesn't work. And I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Because, so, the situation was Mark Bennett got sent off for a high shot on Ali Price. I don't think there was any complaints with regards to it. Mark Bennett certainly seemed fairly relaxed about the decision. It came about from a captain's challenge. Which, interestingly, the TMO did review it during the match and then said it was fine. Which,
I mean, there was a lot going on. The ball was still in play.
That's a kind way of saying he's clanged that one.
It was Holly Davidson.
Was it? Oh, sorry, Holly. Yeah, well, she got it wrong. She got it wrong. It was, she reviewed it during the game.
Yeah, I think maybe because there's so many incidents happening, do we need more officials? You know, I mean, we don't need to make it like American football, you know, like 40 flags on the play, you know, every every line of scrimmage.
That's that.
But I mean, there's 30 players on that field. A lot of stuff going on off the ball, beyond the ball, everywhere, and you know, on the ball. So, you know, there's a lot of eyes needed. So, could we maybe, and this, because we end up spending half our time whinging about referees.
We do.
If we had more referees, would it be better, or would it just make more of a mess?
Would there be more people to whinge about?
Indeed. Like we need any reason.
I know. So, the way it transpired, Glasgow actually had Rob Harley in the sin bin at that point. So, in reality, they only benefited from 10 minutes or so of red card time.
I don't even think if even that.
Because then, Mr. Kebble, Ollie Kebble, went and got himself sent off. We'll not talk about Mr. Purgos's role in this yet, because I think we might have a wee chat about that later on. But Ollie Kebble, for what it's worth, elbowed Henry Purgos off the ball. The play was dead. Purgos was being niggly, trying to get the ball off him when he shouldn't have been, and got promptly elbowed in the face, which resulted in another captain's challenge from Edinburgh and a red card for Glasgow. So, Mark Bennett was a shoe-in red card. I'm happy with that. Kebble?
The amount of force is one thing. They were saying that during columns, John Barkley and Chris Patterson, the only thing that could have negated it is the amount of force that was put in, because it was a violent shrug of the shoulder, shall we say, with a elbow going into face. It was stupid. You know, Kebble's got a bit of a temper. We've seen him lashing out a few times. And, you know, derby match, scrum half, tempers need to be, you need to make sure you're on point.
Nice. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know fine well, like, so 10 years ago you might have got away with it, 15 years ago you might have got away with it, but now there's cameras. If you're an All Black, you'd get away with it, but now with all the sort of onus on player behaviour, it's just brain dead. It's so stupid of him to do that. And, you know, we've got, so Sam Laycock is kind of saying it looked worse than it was. Yeah, it probably did, but actually ultimately it's not about how it looked. It's, there was contact, however much you want to say, there was contact, and he has lashed his elbow out, and we just, players can't behave like that anymore. It's, you know, people need to get away from this idea that we can have the rough, tough enforcer, you know, out doing, grabbing people by the throat and throwing elbows and punching folk. It's just, that's not the sport we have anymore, and it's for the best. Like, I would happily have that debate with people that, you know, if we want to go down the good old days and let's let the boys play, we'll have that argument. Does that deserve a woke klaxon? I think it probably does, doesn't it? All right, 2 seconds. There we go. There we go. Right, I've woke klaxoned myself. And yeah, Alan McDonald's spot on. He chucked an elbow. He's read all day long. That, like, in basic terms, that is it. You know, you can argue the semantics of it till the cows come home. But you're not going to get anywhere with that. It's a red card. So let's talk about man of the match, Cole Forbes. Now, we've been very clear from very early on in his fledgling Glasgow career that we both like the cut of this guy's cloth. We like what he is all about, in spite of his extracurricular activities. What another cracking performance. He was at the heart of everything good Glasgow were doing. And in particular, I thought him and he seems to have already a decent connection with Ross Thompson, worked very well with him, and just a classy operator with a kind of brute force streak about him.
Yeah, I mean, cracking line and timing of his run to get that first try. You know, he's just scythed right across at a 45-degree angle. And then he's shown the other side of his game with the assist for the Kyle Steyn try. He's solid under a high ball. He doesn't miss too many tackles. He runs like the Jesus. Actually, I asked Danny Wilson specifically about him at a press conference yesterday. And I didn't have time to write an article, so I'll just read out what he said here. He said, yeah, he's been outstanding. He's quite a find for us. He's very young, in the same age bracket as some of the names we mentioned. We'd be talking about Rufus McLean and Ollie Smith and that before, see if they'd be getting more game time. And now I've lost that. I flipped my phone and it was disappeared. That's annoying. He took a bit of a bang in that game, so he might not play this week. But he's had a few games for us, but he has had a couple of injuries as well. He's definitely one for the future. And very much so, because we need to remember, he looks older than 21, and he plays older than 21, but he still is only 21 years old. And he already looks like he has a pretty rounded skill set. So I think we've managed to get ourselves a bit of a coup there.
He's one of those players, isn't he, that, you know, we talk a lot with both Glasgow and Edinburgh about them taking rugby risks, which is players who are coming over who maybe not necessarily, they don't have the pedigree. They're not, so a guy like Callum Gibbons coming over, he had played Super Rugby. Even someone like Sean Maitland years ago coming over, they'd played Super Rugby. They had a pedigree about them. They had maybe some All Blacks interest, but for one reason or t'other, it hadn't quite panned out. Guys like Forbes are a much, much bigger kind of gamble, essentially. It's like, as a young guy who's maybe got something, but let's see how he handles it. Almost in some ways, they can be a much more exciting prospect, because, you know, a guy who's willing to come all the way across the world to come and play some rugby, nothing really to lose. It reminds me a lot of Sam Johnson, actually, who Sam Johnson had a wee bit more pedigree about him, but again, quite unknown. Moved his life across the world. He said himself in interviews, he was like, I was kind of just happy to get a couple of years out of it, thinking play a wee bit of rugby for a couple of years and then go and get a real job. And he strikes me as that sort of player, you know, just kind of doing it for the love of the game, but bloody good player as well.
I'd say, you know, as well as Sam Johnson, when you were going back to the likes of Maitland, you look at Nico Matawalu, Leonie Nakarawa, there's a couple of guys who are plucked from, I mean, especially in the case of Nakarawa, I think, was he not just plucked from like the British Army team?
Yeah, no, he was completely amateur and popped out of nowhere. So there's a lot to be said for that. And I think, Cole Forbes has a Scottish gran. Excellent. So
the old Scottish granny.
Scottish granny, the Tunnock tea cakes. So I would imagine then that... if we move on to the summer tour talk, which the news regarding the summer tour is that the A fixture that Scotland are going to play will be against the newly renamed. Is it renamed if it goes back to an old name? I don't know. But our good pals, England A, will be giving us a wee game down in Leicester before we do the two main tour fixtures, which is Georgia and Romania, isn't it?
Yep,
I remember rightly. So, we are going to see lots of new picks and lots of opportunities. And the A fixture, the A team, is our capture team. So, we will be looking to cap players. And I would think Forbes will be there or thereabouts for that, surely.
Yeah, if not the A, then certainly the actual Georgia-Romania tour, I would think. Because, you know, if someone like Rufus McLean, he's been called into the Scotland squad on the back of, you know, a couple of good performances. And Forbes has certainly done that. And then you'd say, in terms of consistency, probably outshone him, McLean. Not to say McLean's been bad, it's just that Forbes has been that bloody good. So, yeah, he'll definitely be playing a part sometime this summer. They might even just try him out in the A game and then sort of say, yeah, I think we will take him. Because, I mean, Georgia, to be fair, I think the England A game is probably going to be the hardest of the three fixtures. Because, you know, we know that England have got a lot of strength and depth.
Yeah. We should probably clarify that England A, for those who are of a certain vintage and are listening or watching, England, the England Saxons, as they were known. So the RFU continue to do that, what Exeter Chiefs have failed to do, and are recognising that sometimes a name is very important, and they wanted to rename the England Saxons as England A because they thought that was more representative of the diversity of culture that they were trying to encourage within the RFU. It also links quite heavily into the work that has already been started by Hugo Monnier and his task force of work down there.
See, I don't know. I didn't see that explanation that they changed the name, and I'm glad I didn't see it on Twitter because I imagine that was a pure gammon fest.
I would imagine there was ham. I mean, that would have been
a like a butcher's, mate.
Yeah, it would have been a cheese and ham baguette with extra ham, I'm thinking. So maybe with some pickle. Cheese and pickle with a wee bit of ham. Because I'm thinking
mainly ham.
I'm thinking mainly ham because I'm thinking pickle. I don't know, in my head, pickle's like the next level of gammon. You know, like, you've got gammons and then you've got, like, pickled gammons. I don't know if a pickled gammon's a thing.
And they're just so puce that they've you know...
yeah! They've been so angry! Consumed by their own gammondom.
Soaking in their own brain of fury.
Oh, dear. So, to take that off. Yes, I'm still choking here. That was the logic behind it. So I think there's an opportunity there to make sure that we capture a few people. There's a few names already in the a few of the normal names that kind of come up at this point. Ashman already seems committed to us. However, Eddie's batting his eyelids at him. Giving them the come hither, so we shall see. I think the A will be a really interesting one because you've got obviously Mike Blair's leading the team, and I would imagine that will be used as a capture for a few players like Forbes. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of familiar faces in there. A lot of guys like the lesser spotted Blair Cowan might make an appearance, for example, out of nowhere.
I think his race is run. Josh Bayliss, I think, will be one. One person who will not be going is Grant Gilchrist. He's had to get ankle surgery, I believe. So he's out for the rest of the season. Yeah, he came off after, I think, 60, 65 minutes.
He did, yeah.
So I believe Gav Harper said he'd had to get surgery. Right. So that's Gilco once again ruled out of a summer tour.
Another a summer tour, yeah. How many summer tours has he actually managed to be on? Probably.
He does it on purpose so he can go on holiday in the beach.
He's actually.
I've got a fortnight at Fort Aventura booked up. I'm missing that.
He's actually booked in just north of South Africa for a wee jaunt. Geography 6 ride again. My logic for a guy like Blair Cowan, I totally agree with you, his race has run, absolutely. But I think the mistake they made a couple of years ago with the North American tour, with that famous loss to the US, was people talk about the experience that we didn't have that day. we should also remember that our current Scotland captain made his first. He was Scotland captain for the first time that day. I think he's matured a lot since that day. Let's be fair, but there was a lack of experience that day, and I think it was kind of borne out in the way that the US were allowed to dominate that fixture. So I don't think they'll let that happen again.
True, and he is a canny operator, and you know, seems to be playing some of the best rugby of his career at the moment. I think it would be as a sort of, well, almost like an enforcer kind of role, or just more of a nanny almost. And then you could have the likes of maybe Luke Crosby playing with him at six, so you've got that sort of dual open side thing going on again.
It'll be the tour barber as well.
That as well, yeah.
Because everyone knows that, like, I mean, some of the Barnetts that have been on the go since the hairdressers. I mean, even since the hairdressers reopened, people have obviously said, "Do you know what? No, I'm going to do this myself." And I think there's a role for someone like Blair Cowan to really fill.
Yeah, the psychological boost of having a decent haircut for the players, you know, if
they
walk onto the pitch proud of their appearance, confident in themselves.
So do you think then for the summer tour that we are going to see, apologies, so Townsend always has a let's call it Tooney's pick, where it plucks someone out of absolute obscurity to join the Scotland squad. Will we see any of those, or do you think maybe Townsend, given that he'll have his he'll be busy elsewhere? Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe we'll maybe not get Finlay Christie, for example?
Yeah, I can't see him like that. There seems to be a lot of chat coming out of Edinburgh about Ben Muncaster. He's highly rated, so, and you know, as one of these guys, I think primarily he would be viewed as a number eight or a blind side, a sort of traditional blind side. And that's always one area we're a wee bit short on. So there is a possibility that he'll be going. Or, I mean, what are the chances of someone like Adam Ash making a comeback? Depending on how things are going in LA.
It would depend on the Wi-Fi signal.
Yes.
Moving swiftly on. So there we go. Thank you, Gordon McCracken, for jumping in there. Somebody had to. We've had Finlay Christie. Like, who's the other ones? Nathan.
Ben Vellacott.
Ben Vellacott, of course. Now that he's signed for Edinburgh, of course, he's going to be...
There's a boy that plays for Saracens, Andrew Christie.
Oh, yes, aye.
He used to be Scotland's under-16. He's played under-19 for England. There we go. We could try and lure him.
So, I mean, basically what we're saying here is anyone that has even the remotest possible connection to Scottish rugby, if we can get them hooked up, let's get them on this A tour. Let's get them along. I don't think... whilst Mr. Hunter Hill is a very, very, very talented rugby player, I'm not entirely sure he is completely... I don't think he'll be touring for Scotland. I'll leave it at that.
I don't know.
I would love to be proven wrong.
I would think that, you know, we've seen that time heals wounds. Just think about Tooney and Finn.
Tooney and Finn. Yes, we have seen that time heals wounds, but we've also seen that, as predicted, John Hardy has not played for Scotland again since his exile to Newcastle. So, yes, there's not saying that it's comparable. Let's be very clear. Just that there has been issues with Calum Hunter-Hill in the past, and I don't think all is well with both sides. Both parties tend not to get on. But I believe Calum Hunter-Hill has a podcast or a blog or something that he does that's very mindful, Very, very meditative, and he likes to think deeply about things. So maybe there is an opportunity there. Maybe I'm being, maybe the old cynic in me, so negative, couldn't even get a positive COVID test. That's how negative I am. So yeah, two negatives make a positive. That's basically our whole rhythm section, Ian, in the band. We're so negative, we make a positive.
So at the time it becomes jazz.
That's it. Yeah, we make the time. Will Gary Graham ever play again? Yes, I would imagine so. I would expect him to probably feature.
But he's had his chances. He's not exactly grabbed them. He's tended to just give away penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as, this is the thing, if he keeps performing at a high enough level in the Premiership, then obviously you can't overlook him unless there's something particular about his style that Townsend doesn't like. But he has picked him before. He's managed to make him, you know, he's lured him to the light side of the force. So, I mean, there's a chance for him, but I think he's going to have to realise after his last performance, he's probably pushed himself back to the bottom of the queue. Or near the
bottom. Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think, but again, that's where this tour is a good opportunity for players like that to, you know, they've talked about that with the Lions, actually, about players almost playing themselves back into form. And there's an opportunity there if you're going into quite an experienced Scotland setup, but you know, there's going to be, if Gary Graham goes on tour, he's going to be one of the more experienced rugby players on that tour, potentially, whilst he doesn't have international experience to the extent that some others may. He's been around the block, he knows his way about a rugby pitch, and there's a confidence that can come from that, just knowing that you are one of the elder statesmen. And sometimes that's all it takes for a player to really find their feet at international rugby. So let's see. But I agree with you. I think I'm kind of talking myself around here, but like I've had him at the back of the queue for quite some time anyway. I didn't get on board with the Gary Graham hype train, despite the fact he had a wonderful beard.
Yeah. A beard does not always make a man, as can be seen here.
You kidding, Ian? You are very manly at training yesterday, don't you worry.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see.
That's because I've not worn my yellow boots yet. I'm just waiting to wear these yellow boots and get my ass handed to me.
I know, just wait till contact training's back.
They are ridiculously comfy though. Like, I really want to run about in them because I've tried the one, like, oh man, these are really comfy. I love Puma boots.
So, anything else summer tour wise? Is anything else?
I can't really think of any other bolters. Obviously, Cummings took a bit of a bang.
Glasgow came out and said he was. They were quite cryptic about the statement. Actually, they said he was fine and he was well enough to be involved in the trophy presentation at the end of the match. When I watched the game back the other day there, I did see, like, at the end when they were all shaking hands and stuff, he was up and about and he was talking to, I think it was Jimmy Ritchie actually, and he was saying, he kind of was indicating, nah, I'm alright, I'm fine. But it was a very shocking one actually, how quickly he was down.
That could be just one of these things. I've heard, like, you know, it's just a wee sort of trigger at the back of your jaw, I think, that it's like a knockout button. So I remember there's a sort of UFC Big Brother, and there was a guy that was convinced he couldn't get knocked out. So he's like, oh yeah, you can't knock me out, bro. And this dude, he's like, no, you can. It's like it's a physical reaction. It's not a mental thing. It's not it's not about heart or anything. It's a physical thing. You'll get knocked out. You can't knock me out, bro. Drill.
Down you go, son. Yeah, so yeah, hopefully comes Roy Hutchinson. Yeah, there's Gordon, like, not being funny, but Gordon, I think you should be on the selectors. So if you can just get in contact with SRU, we know they listen anyway. So to the poor intern that's having to listen to this.
Lang Hutchinson at 12:13, that might be an option.
I'm going to get accused of Glasgow bias, but I just can't see what everybody else sees in Lang. I want desperately to be proven wrong.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe he's one of these guys that takes, he could be the new Chris Harris, just takes a while to settle. But obviously,
well, that's going to turn out Edinburgh.
But whenever I'd heard people say he'd been playing well for Harlequins, whenever I stuck it on, he'd have a shocker. I mean, oh, he's playing well. Watch this. Oh, wait, he's just thrown an intercept pass and cost his team the game.
Dang.
no, I will see a lot more of him. And obviously, he'll get more time probably at Edinburgh as he's one of their sort of bigger name signings so far.
Yeah. I think Chris Harris will be the new baseline for Scotland debutants as they come through. We'll go, is he a Harris or, you know...
Is he Harris or Hugh?
Harris or Hugh, yes. Yeah, that's our new benchmark, Harris or Hugh. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the selections look like. I would imagine as well there'll be a few guys, probably a few guys will use, because obviously we're now at the middle of a World Cup cycle, which is terrifying given that it feels like 12 minutes ago that we were playing this mob.
We were arguing about a tsunami.
I know, right? But midway through a World Cup cycle, normally teams like New Zealand will, they will normally rest players. You would normally do a kind of a rest gap period at this point. So we might see a few players given the summer off. And we also might see a few players who are given the summer off with a view to making sure they're in the vicinity of Joe Berg in case of emergency for the...
They got last summer off, they don't get this one as well.
That's true, actually, yeah. Maybe that will have an impact.
One of my concerns would actually be Locke, now thinking about it, with Cummings out,
yeah,
Gilko out, Johnny Gray. Well, we don't know Cummings is out, but obviously, you know, he's going to be a concern. Gilchrist is out. The lesser-spotted Ben Toulis, is he still on the injury list? I'm sure I've seen him in squads.
Everyone's favourite, like, Scottish rugby's Thor himself. Like I think Ben Toulis could be a shout. Alex Craig as well
would be there.
What we have seen is looked good, but he could be an option.
Sam Skinner.
Skinner at 4 or 5, yeah, absolutely.
If they're not scheduled. Like, it's not this whole debacle about the Premiership still being ongoing, because the Premiership final scheduled for the same day as the Japan Lions game. And I think then Scotland have scheduled the England game for either the day prior or the day after. Or certainly within a week of it, so that would probably
rule schedule. I think there'll be some negotiations going on with regards to that. Probably worth... Yeah, I mean, Skinner's likely to be involved in the Premiership final, as is like certainly Johnny Gray. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll, for the most part, our English contingent will be available to us. But
I wonder if Bradbury will go, because he's been filling in at lock sometime. can he, you know, rekindle that? That slight little spark that still remains.
Do you remember when they went down the route of playing Dave Denton at lock as well? I mean, what is the deal with putting brutish eight, Edinburgh eights, and putting them at lock? I'm not on board with this. I need to have some words. But Bradbury's a really interesting one. I think is he young enough to say that, like, or sorry, is he old enough to say his race is run? I don't know, but he hasn't, like, he's just not done anything to justify being anywhere near international selection for, forever.
Oh, wild card.
Go for it. Oh, that's a great shout, actually. Yeah. Is he playing out?
New Zealand.
Waikato, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, that's a great shout. Because he's very highly rated over there. So
yeah, and he's not like I've completely forgotten his name now. The Blake boys.
Oh no. What about someone like Kieran McDonald?
I mean he's broken all the time.
Yeah.
I don't.
But he looks like. I mean, I've got a bit of an affinity with Kieran McDonald because of that hairdo. He just looks so like I'm so bald. It is. Fair enough. Again, if we go back to our logic that people will be picked on their tour haircuts, then Kieran McDonald's obviously a problem because, you know, what is Blair Cowan going to work his magic with?
Like one of those TV shows, I'm sure he'll be able to backcomb it and do something magnificent and majestic.
So based on that logic as well, Nick Gregg will go as tour captain with his new, freshly installed plugs.
Well, speaking of which, Stafford McDowell, I thought he had a good game.
He did. You've been beating the Stafford drum for quite some time, actually, asking where the hell he's been.
Yeah, he had a shoulder problem, so he was out for basically 6 months. He was on the press conference yesterday. I can't say much more because I think it's still under embargo. But I'm sure, I mean, we can all look and see that he was injured for 6 months. So, yeah, it's good to see him back because I think he's a really good player. Big brute of a boy.
Yeah, he's the sort of boy who looks, when he takes the ball into contact, like, if you're not paying attention, you're like, oh, that's a big back row carrying the ball in. He's very big lad. Six five. Same as Blair Kinghorn as well. He's 6'5", which is bloody massive. So let's just do this before we go on. So what fly halves do we reckon will go on tour?
Thompson, Yakko. I don't know if Hastings will be fit.
Donkey Weir.
I think he'd take Chamberlain ahead of Weir.
I think he would be sensible to take Chamberlain ahead of Weir. Because you know my views on the regressive approach taking Duncan Weir is. I think Thompson's spot on. Yakko will go for because he's got experience. I don't know, Hastings, he'll either not be fit or he'll get the summer off to go and move, because they quite often do when you're moving to a new club, you kind of get a bit of time off to go and kind of make your way down and settle in. It's one of the better things SRU do, so Hastings.
Could Kinghorn go as the emergency then?
That upsets me.
He's played a Champions Cup match there.
That upsets me in a lot of different ways.
I knew it would. But you know, it's not. I'm just saying who could go.
I would probably imagine that someone like.
Lang, but
yeah.
Edinburgh, you know, he's moving to Edinburgh now, so.
He might get a bit of time. Who knows? Maybe I would think Thompson and Yakko are probably nailed on. Duncan Weir's a possible. Hastings if he's fit, but I think there might be a surprise in the cards. We might be able to. There might be something coming out. Who knows? There might be someone somewhere who wants to play 10 for Scotland.
Charlie Savala, the Edinburgh boy, because his dad's. That's Scottish. There was an interview with him yesterday as well. There's loads of fascinating stuff. He's an interesting young man.
Cool. I know. So let's quickly do a Lions debrief before we go on to our Hands of the Ruck. Hamish Watson has come out and said he has quoted Rage Against the Machine lyrics to all of those haters gonna hate who are saying that he's too small, which I was really, really glad to see.
Did Hamish Watson actually paraphrase Rage Against the Machine?
No, I've kind of in my head, like what he was saying.
If it was Hamish Watson, that would have just been like, oh my God, he is so cool.
That would have been amazing, wouldn't it?
Especially with that haircut.
I don't think he would be allowed to, based on the kind of press, the press control, the way the kind of PR managed the guys. I don't think he would be allowed to come out and quote Killing in the Name of during a press conference. If it happens, I will applaud, but I don't think so.
That's the new Bears Doogie Donnelly. References of players put into their press conferences this week. Oh man, do we need to do another Lions debrief? I've been talking about this number.
No, we don't. We just need to say Hamish Watson has come out and said he's annoyed at people mentioning that he's too small. He's pointed out that in other sports, dynamic positions are normally held by those small, strong, and fast players, which he obviously identifies as. Other than that, Danny Kerr's come out and said he was gutted to not be picked again. You would think, I mean, honestly, I have no time in the world for Danny Kerr. I actually don't like him that much. So my heart truly bleeds for you. This is the size of the violin you have. For those on audio, I have got a tiny little violin here. And I'm just going to... There you go.
That's...
So...
You need to get a new synthesizer if that's your violin sound.
That's my violin for Danny Kerr.
You see, if Hamish Watson's too small, right? Did people say that to Roy Jones Jr. when he went out in the ring against Nikolai Valuev? No, they did not.
Hell no.
Was it eight weights did he win world titles at? Yep. Like five of the major ones and then sort of the subdivisions. It's absolute crap. It's, you know, it's all the miserable grown journals that keep peddling out this pish. And they had Neil Francis.
Hold there. Neil Francis, right? Let's do this. I am currently showing a discipline unheard of at this side of the M8 by trying to keep to some semblance of time. Yes, it is Hands in the Ruck. It is time for our Any Other Business. Who has riled us, got us racy, or just made us feel pure tingly inside? It is let's just go to you straight away, Ian, and we can bring in quite a few people have mentioned Mr. Francis.
Now, unfortunately, I've ran out of free articles, so I can't bring it up. And also, the place where I'd seen a text transcript of it, I've been banned from that group because the founder obviously has strange standards. I mean, there's an implied swear word in the title of the group, and I starred out a sweary word. And it wasn't directed at a fellow member or anything. I starred out a couple of swear words. And I've been booted out of the group. But, I mean, to be honest, it was full of gammons anyway. It was quite interesting because there was somebody who has a lot of historical sort of things kicking about and, you know, he'd share pictures of them. So that was interesting. But the rest of the time, it was just the same old pish. Particularly the, they keep signing foreign players. Why don't you give the young Scottish boys a chance? All right, fair enough. Just calm down. Yes, Neil Francis has joined the pantheon of old crone journalists peddling out the same old cliched nonsense about Scotland players not being good enough for the Lions. He said that none of them should be anywhere near the test team. Obviously, there was the Hamish Watson's too small crap. Doohan Verdemerva apparently made him sick to his stomach when his name was called out. And he's like, he's useless under a high ball. Now, I imagine I've seen a lot more of Doohan Vandermeer than this clown has. And I think I only saw him drop one. I think I've only seen him drop one high ball since he's in Scotland colours. And if you're a Scotland winger, that's usually a pretty good return. And you know, it's just, it's actually sort of bordering on racist. They're just the fact that they picked on every single player.
Yeah, let's deal with racism for a second. We've done this a few times on this podcast. This is going to, right. So I think Scotland fans, I make an appeal to you to not engage with this, because this is going to be our life for the next 3 months or so. People are going to call Doohan van der Merwe South African. People are going to refer to our players as not being good enough for the Lions. I don't think it's unfair to say there was a media campaign against Scottish players. And like, that sounds really paranoid, right? And I hear it. But the evidence was there that, you know, the Tom Curry debate, people absolutely waxing lyrical about Tom Curry when Hamish Watson's infinitely better. It smacks of racism, and it's people are afraid of change, and they're afraid of things being different for them. And the Irish press in particular have an issue with this, because in their heads they are still the team that beat the All Blacks. And I'm sorry to tell you guys, and I hope you're all listening, because if you are, we're getting paid clicks for it, because I would love that. But you're not that good anymore, guys. And yeah, you've beaten us. We've beaten ourselves a few times against you. But I take it you didn't mention what country Bundiaki's from, right?
Oh, I don't recall that, no.
No, funny that. No, bet he's as... Oh, CJ Stander, yes. Bundy's as Irish as Guinness, isn't he?
And the stuff about Chris Harris was, he's like, oh, might as well be Neil Harris, was that the Orville guy? You know, it's just, all it smacks of is you don't watch rugby other than your own. You know, you're almost fair weather fans. But what it is, it's the same with, you know, the Times and Telegraph. It is pandering to their readership. That's all it is. They're slightly more conservative, you know, right wing. That's conservative with a small C and a big C, by the way. Sort of right wing, stuck in the mud, sort of people, like, who are just also with a hint of superiority. Sort of, they put it down as being patriotic, but really it's more a sort of, you know, current of undertone supremacy about them.
Yeah, I think this is a fair point. So, Francis St. Jones, apart, is it not more a case of many folks still struggling to process that Scotland is now competitive after many years of indifference? If that's the mindset, then obviously Curry must, by definition, be superior to Watson. Yeah, I think Martin Bell, you're absolutely spot on. I think there is an element of that, but I think Ian's point is valid as well. I think there is what this does show up is a lack of, right. So, you know, we've talked on here. I watch a lot of different rugby. I watch rugby from various different leagues. I try to, for the most part, and people will say, "Oh yeah, well you criticise Edinburgh players all the time." I do watch the Edinburgh games, by the way, just to be clear, guys. You know, I try to be quite objective with players and give, you know, guys like Tom Curry down in the Premiership. I try to watch games before I say, do you know what, I think he's mince. And I've not come out and said that in the slightest. I have said that I think Hamish Watson's a better player. There's an element of Scottish pride that comes from that, but also, like, objectively, he's a better player. In all the stats and what I've seen with my admittedly non-professional eyes. As a rugby fan, I prefer Hamish Watson. But it wouldn't stop me saying that I think that X player, you know, I think Lewis Rees-Sammet is a phenomenal player. Do I think Darcy Graham should tour? Or do I think, you know, I'm struggling to say Glasgow wingers just now because we don't actually have that many decent ones, but, you know, like, or experienced ones, should I say. You know, a guy, like, a few years ago, Sean Maitland, for example, former Glasgow player. Do I think that Sean Maitland should tour over Lewis Rees-Sammet? Absolutely not. Because Lewis Rees-Sammet is a far better attacker just now than Maitland is. So, you know, it's speaking with a degree of authority about players that you've actually watched and not just speaking because your viewership thinks it would be really funny if you criticise Scotland all the time, which pundits do. And it just shows lazy journalism. And before you know it, these lazy journalists will get caught in a Wikipedia trap somewhere.
The tangled webs that the black widow spider weaves.
So, yeah, I mean...
That wasn't even going to be my hands in the rock. It was actually going to be Mike Brown.
Right, go for it, Mike Brown, then.
Did you see the stamp? Right, so there's been a lot of people saying, oh, it's a shame how that's his Harlequin's career's ended. He's got a six-week ban, which I think he's very lucky to get away with, because...
entry level of 12 weeks, he was given.
Yeah, have you seen the sort of scorecards that the English Rugby Union have brought out? So entry point is 12 weeks, and then there's just like a bunch of tick boxes. Yeah, so head contact, aye. Reckless, aye. Intentional, no. All right. Player injured, vulnerability of player because the player was on the floor. Now, I don't know if you've seen it, but he's basically stamped on... he has stamped on Tom Taylor's face.
He has, yeah.
He could quite easily have taken an eye out. And I think he could have avoided stamping on his face.
I think when I watched it back, so I saw the reaction to it first, and obviously, again, Mike Brown's a player that I love to hate. So I wanted it to be bad. And then I seen it, and I went, do you know what? I can see both sides of it, but it is very reckless. And there's enough there that says it could have been avoided. So I think had he got 12 weeks, he would have been lucky. I think 6 weeks is actually criminal that he's got away with only 6 weeks. Whether it ends his Harlequins career or not, let's be honest, his Harlequins career ended like 2 years ago because he's been guff ever since.
He's been crying recently about how he didn't get a new contract, but then Harlequins came in and said we offered him 3 new contracts in the space of 12 months. So it's hard to know who
well, he'll head off to Newcastle with, I'm sure, the best wishes of everyone.
I don't think some of the Newcastle fans, their reactions don't seem too chuffed about having him, because he did come out and say, if it was up to me, I wouldn't be going. So that's a way to endear yourself to your new fans, eh?
It should take a leaf out of an Andy Good playbook, and I can't believe I'm saying that. But, you know, go and just endear yourself to the fans that you're going to run out in front of. He always was a wee bit of a prima donna, though, wasn't he? He thought the world of himself. And I remember the interviews with, so it was before Scotland, England, and they probably beat us. I can't remember which one it was, but Mike Brown was playing fullback. They'd done like a 10-15 minute segment on him before the game, where they were talking about how he'd been working with a sprint coach and how he was as fast as he had ever been, and he was as strong, and he was an animal on the park, and it was just utterly cringe. And made me loathe him even more. I mean, I disliked him anyway, because he has that sort of face about him where you're just looking at him going, I don't like you. And then put him in a white England shirt and give him that build up, and yeah, I mean, we're just never going to get on. We're not going to see eye to eye.
Good.
Good. Sorry, that's not going to get us kicked off Facebook, hopefully. In terms of hands in the ruck, so I'm just checking to make sure. I'm going to go back to our super secret Facebook page just to check if we've had any entries. The HDF. Oh, there's us. Oh, hello.
I won't be behind.
just to see. Oh, we've got so got a couple of hands in the ruck. Yeah, so one Ian Kai says hands in the ruck, Mike Brown. That's it. Fair news. Shona Milligan, hands in the ruck, James Haskell going on social media to complain about allowing people online to dictate what we do, say, and what's right and wrong, and not seeing the irony in this. Also, Instagram for suggesting I follow James Haskell. Yeah. After our chat about James Haskell a couple of weeks ago, I had someone message me immediately after the podcast, and they said simply, this James Haskell guy sounds like a right Roman Platt. They had no idea who he was, but based on your chat about how many he's dug, yeah, he was dubbed the Roman Platt. So, other hands and rucks, we've got Gavin Brockie, hands and ruck, Lion Squad, Irish journalist, ex-Irish rugby players, pundits, yes. Also, right, does Edinburgh have an attack coach?
I think one of those Irish pundits who would be criticising Scotland players would be Luke Fitzgerald, and I know of a particular forum who would give out an award called the Fitzy Award, which is for the stupidest comment of the week. So that's what people think of Luke Fitzgerald.
People
think he's an idiot.
He doesn't really endear himself to anyone, does he? So
no.
Craig Manson, again, you're getting all the mentions tonight, mate. His hands are up is George Horn on the bench and not getting on the pitch. Seriously, we, bracket Edinburgh, would quite happily start him. Take your wandering eyes elsewhere, young man.
Did you notice that Schoeman and Nell played the full 80 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose they don't have a lot of running about to do because they were just walking to set piece after Glasgow gave away penalties. But especially for Nell.
Yeah, Nell had 35. He had a big match for 80 minutes as well. I thought he was very good.
He's still an incredible scrummager.
Yeah. I liked the commentary. Was it the thing Hamilton was saying? Not Jim Hamilton, the other Hamilton.
Rory Hamilton.
Rory Hamilton was saying that he has him penned in for the 2025 Lions.
Yeah.
I was like, aye, that's brilliant. So last hands of the ruck, it's more LMLC, legally mandated Lions chat. I was just sorry. We've got to work out our acronym here. It can be quite difficult. This is Mark Bell. I know, man. There's too many acronyms going around. Given that Gats is building his test starting 15 around Chris Harris, who should he select at 12 in the back three to provide appropriate platform on which Chris can demonstrate his greatness? I love everything that you've just said in that hands in the ruck. So Harris at 13, who does he pick at 12?
See, if I want just some an attack, I just want them running straight lines at South Africans, so I want Robbie Henshaw.
At 12, then?
I think defensively, the pair of them would be a bit of a brick wall as well, because Henshaw,
he's solid, isn't he? Right, so we're saying Russell at 10, Henshaw. I'm not even having a debate about 10, by the way. I'm not having this. This is banned from now on. Anyone mentions the B word, you can go and go to it. That word, that's banned. I'm going to edit that out with a bleep. So Russell at 10, Henshaw at 12, Harris at 13, Doohan, Hogg, and who's our last wing? Either Watson or Rhys Sammet.
Yeah, I'd go with Watson.
Aye, the new until Rhys Sammet plays the first test and absolutely runs rings around everybody, and then you go, "Aye, you're quite good, mate. You can be on our team." Aye, that seems like I think hopefully, Martin, that answers your question. We think Henshaw is your 12. I think if Bundiaki gets near a Lions shirt like at test level, I'll be very sad about that. But not from the racist perspective, but from the the rugby talent perspective. But I know you like Aki Ian, so
Well, you know, just because it's made me look clever. That's the only reason.
I love it. So my hands in the rug, just to finish this up. We're fast approaching an hour and a half. I thought we'd be on for an hour max. My hands in the rug is back to the start. Lovely. All the way around we go. Henry Purgos. And Henry Purgos' reaction to being elbowed in the face. I'm now going to let loose a little bit because it was quite reserved earlier on. Yes, Keble did make contact with him. Henry Purgos has absolutely milked that for all it's worth. And anyone who disagrees, he goes down, holds both sides of his face, and then immediately gets back up and starts pointing fingers. I don't know the last time you were elbowed in the face, Ian, but last time I was, I didn't really feel like getting back up and pointing fingers after it. I felt a bit sore, like I'd been elbowed in the face. And when I last got elbowed in the face, it wasn't by a 20-stone South African. Sorry, I should say Scots qualified South African.
Yeah, but then that implies that, you know, Keble's just got so much force in it that it's caused a shockwave through Purgos's jaw and entire cranium, which has forced him to clutch both sides of his face. I think he realizes once he's decked it, he's kind of Neymar'd it. Because when we it look, it kind of hits him. It's in the lower part of the jaw. It doesn't look a mass amount of force, but he's gone down like with the double clasp, you know, the famous double clasp of
Rivaldo, wasn't it? Rivaldo when he
the double clasp, and yes, yeah, hit off the thigh with the Turkish, who's it?
The Turkish boy, yeah.
I can't mean that guy's name now. Was it Emery Chan, was it? Yeah, it's that classic, like, they do the double clasp so that then they can, like, keep a wee hole between their eyes. Hole between their hands, just so their fingers can get out and see, is that I'm in trouble yet?
Man, is the referee bought it yet? Oh, no, he's not. I'm going to get up and run and point fingers now.
If Jonathan Sexton did that, as he has done, we've got an offer nut at it.
Yeah.
We all remember the Alex Dunbar incident when he got judo tossed and then held the opposite side of his head to the one that he landed on. I think Purgos has kind of done the same, but then a wee bit of guilt has hit him as he's gone on the floor. And he's going, oh no, I look like a bit of a sweary word now. I'm going to go up and I'll go up and gently threaten a prop because he'll tear my head off if I actually get in a fight with him.
It was a bold statement, wasn't it? To go and say, oh, how dare you elbow me in the face? It's like, I wouldn't be going back for afters if I'd just been elbowed in the face by the elbow on Keble, to be fair. I mean, you're absolutely right. The Sexton points. Right. If Henry was a Glasgow player, we'd be saying the exact same. Like, when Stuart Hawke done his wee dive in the World Cup in 2015, I was embarrassed by that. I thought it was really a really rubbish thing to do, and it's not something we want to see. And we've all criticised players for doing it. It's creeping into the sport more and more. But I do wonder if the captain's challenge is going to be utilised in that way, because it's almost a great opportunity. Right? So Purgos is in the wrong initially. He should, it's a Glasgow penalty, and he should never be going to get that ball, right? And that we know that players do that, you know, kick the ball away from you, pull it back, etc. etc. Fine. Your job's to not react. But he's bringing a situation about where he knows that there's a possibility where Ollie Keble's going to throw him or move him out the way. And if he is then able to, by chance, get hit in the right place, let's say, then it benefits Edinburgh for 20 minutes.
And he is weir, so, you know.
Yeah, so an elbow or an arm, like, let's be honest, we've all moved an arm out the way to get someone out our way when we're playing rugby. If you're, you know, half a foot shorter, or, you know, you're a wee bit shorter, an elbow can quite easily swing at you and hit you in the face. And being very clear, Kebble should never do that, ever. He should never be throwing his arms like that because it's inviting trouble. And I think he does deserve to be sent off for it. Henry Purgos's reaction is really, really poor. And I think anyone who's defending it just needs to have a wee look at the Johnny Sexton stuff and criticising Johnny Sexton for his rolling about, rightly criticising him for rolling about. Henry Purgos has done the same. I'm sorry, guys, I know he's wanted to defend him and stuff, but he has done the same, and it's not on. It's not in the spirit of what we're trying to do. I also don't think you should be yellow carded for it. I don't think there should be any like punishment necessarily for it. I just think he really just needs to have a look at himself. Take a look at yourself, mate.
Take a look in the mirror.
Take a wee look in the mirror, man.
Mirror.
So, 1 hour, 31 minutes, and I think, unless there's anything else from you, good sir.
No, I've prattled on quite enough.
You've prattled on quite enough. I have blown my voice out once more, so I am probably all done for the eve. So, with that,
hobble to the kitchen at some point.
Jeez. Hobble to the kitchen. Well, do you know what? I bet your hobble is more comfortable because you have got your manscaped.com kit. So,
the pH balance is absolutely spot on in there.
Exactly.
Thanks to the ball deodorant.
Love a bit of ball deodorant. Oosh. Right. Anyway, thank you, everyone who's got involved tonight. Thank you for all your comments. Good to see some new commenters out there as well. Get yourself involved. We will be back next week. I will be back next week. Hopefully, we're talking a bit more 1872. Is it? Can we call it 1872 next week? No, it's probably just...
No, it's just...
Edinburgh, Glasgow.
Glasgow Edinburgh match in the last nine months.
It's becoming like a police academy series, isn't it? We're going to have like, you know, Edinburgh, Glasgow 12, the mission to Moscow.
I've seen at least six police academy movies.
I've seen them all, and I actually am a big fan. I just want to put that out there for the record.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I had them all on VHS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're telly.
Oh, superb. That's a great effort. Did you get them on the BBC without the adverts?
No, but I mean, did you never do the, if you're watching it live, jump forward and hit pause? There we go.
Never hit stop.
Don't hit stop because it takes a while for the record.
And then you used to get worried when you were like recording things like if you were really posh and you had the. Like WrestleMania and stuff like that, and you would know it would be on at like 1 a.m, and you'd have school the next day. You're like, right, I need to record this, and you'd have to put the video on at long play. Bad times, mate. Bad times. Bad times. Anyway, that is enough of us talking utter nonsense for tonight. Have a great evening, everyone, and we will see you again. It has been a pleasure. So it's bye from me and bye from Ian.
Cheery bye.